This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is sponsored by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
But if I were to go back and say, for the ones that didn't work, and we've had to right-size or course-correct or shut down a good number of businesses as well, you could tie it back to what you're talking about with the plan. The plan wasn't as well thought out as it should have been. The pricing model didn't really have the right factors in it. We call them CSFs, critical success factors, where, and you use the same term we use with the track to run on, where the leader didn't have the numbers dialed in terms of how many calls are you going to make per day? How many appointments are you going to set? Right. What's your closing ratio going to be? And what's your price point to back up the budget? And the success ones, like I was mentioning in Estonia, those we started a smoke alarm business. And so we have tens of thousands of clients out in Estonia that we're helping save lives by providing smoke alarm services. And we go door to door, and we also offer it in supermarkets.
Estonia is Eastern Bloc countries, right?
Yeah, it's the Baltic states.
Okay.
And the plan was really dialed in, the recruiting and the selling side of it. And then if you were to dissect another business that started around the same time as the E1 Ventures and said, well, why did they not succeed? I would say one of those factors is the plan wasn't as good. We didn't have critical success factors dialed in, and there might be a variety of other things, but that definitely is one of the learning lessons.
Hey everyone, it's Mitch, your host, and welcome to today's show. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hello, this is Dustin Hillis. I'm the CEO of the Southwestern family of companies. We are a global conglomerate of over 25 different businesses that ranges from everything from financial advising, school fundraising, online educational tools, leadership coaching, travel, and everything in between. I'm also the president of Southwestern Coaching, which is a globally diverse coaching business that's based out of 7 different countries with over 120 certified professional coaches that does sales and leadership coaching. And I'm so excited to be with you guys here today.
All right, Dustin, we're on the mic. So thanks for coming on the podcast. I think Beth connected us, right? Through, I don't know, she's your PR person. So she had connected us because you wrote a book we're going to talk about. And then we had met briefly
Where were you when we talked last time?
Oh, I all over. I'm constantly on the road. Somewhere. We have offices in Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and now Mexico. And we also, if it was a couple months ago, I believe I was in Mexico.
Yeah, at a vacation home or a condo or something, right? So I remember you behind while we were talking.
I don't even know where I was. I was somewhere.
So under normal circumstances,
our real estate business is doing really well down there. We have Southwestern Real Estate in Mexico, and that's one of our newest businesses, and they are doing so well, and we're so proud of them.
Okay, so Dustin, when it's not coronavirus, do you have to travel to a lot of these countries where you guys are doing business as the CEO?
Yes. Yeah. We travel as part of the job, and we have a E1 Ventures out of Estonia where we have three new businesses that's doing really well out in Estonia. So we've had over 10,000 people out in Europe that have gone through our educational selling program over the past 15, 20 years. And so those alumni have started businesses and been very successful. One of the businesses is PipeDrive, which is the number two CRM behind Salesforce. And those were some book guys. And we decided, hey, we ought to start some businesses over there and partner with them. So Jaak Rosari is our leader in Estonia. And I recently actually got my e-residency out of Estonia.
Right.
And I'm there a couple times a year. And then Latvia, Lithuania, Bulgaria, Czech Republic, London, and then everywhere in between. But those are our core hubs in Europe.
Okay. So I want to go back and get into, you know, your background and where you grew up and how you got involved and the things that you did, you know, with the company. But so the Southwestern companies, is it almost like an incubator for business opportunities where you're partnering with people? I mean, is that how a lot of these companies are coming about or?
Yeah, our motto is we build people and those people build great companies.
Okay.
And as America's oldest direct sales company, and we've had over 200,000 people go through our direct selling program where we help parents at home with their educational needs. And we have an online academy. Southwestern Global Academy is our lead product.
Okay.
So it's online learning tools that we sell. And so I did that 18 years ago. That's what I cut my teeth on at Southwestern. And we've had many, many people that have gone through to do that and gone on to be very successful. So some notable alumni that you might recognize, Rick Perry, who's in the energy department of the government, Marsha Blackburn, the first female senator of the state of Tennessee, the founder of Gallup Consulting also was Southwestern alumni, Bruce Henderson. And not Gallup Consulting, Boston Consulting.
Okay.
So the founder of Boston Consulting, Bruce Henderson, was one of our alumni. And so we decided in 1982 that all these notable people were going off and starting businesses like Boston Consulting. And we said, we ought to be doing that ourselves. So Spencer Hayes, Henry Bedford, and the board of directors created a vision to create a private equity plan for us to build companies within the Southwestern family. And so we started fundraising business, and that ended up becoming the largest school fundraising business worldwide. We've raised over $5.5 billion for schools in America. Our fundraising business and our financial planning business.
Right.
And that is now one of the top Raymond James financial planning firms worldwide. And we have a travel business, coaching, and so it all spurred out of the door-to-door education sales business that has created this ecosystem.
Okay, so maybe we can go back when you were young. Tell me, you know, where you're from, and you know, when you're growing up, were you a little entrepreneur? Were you doing businesses? What was your background? Because I know by college, right, you were then with Southwestern Advantage, and you're doing sales in college, right? So what kind of led up to that in terms of your background and your experience?
Let's see, how far back do we want to go? I was born at an early age. And
somebody said that the other day on the podcast too. Were you born in a log cabin too?
No. I was born in Texas.
Right.
And
did you come from an entrepreneurial family or?
I did. Yeah. My dad was an entrepreneur. He started a flooring business out of Texas.
Okay.
Moved it to Nashville, Tennessee. So I lived in Nashville in my elementary school years. And he was looking for office space.
Okay.
So he looked in the newspaper one day and he found office space in a building called Landers Plaza, which is the Southwestern global headquarters that we also have extra offices that we lease to different companies.
So was it their headquarters then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so my dad was just a tenant at Southwestern.
Okay.
And fast forward a few years, his business was growing and scaling and he had more orders than he had cash to fulfill the orders.
Okay.
So he had just randomly running into people through in the halls, met a guy named Spencer Hayes, who is the majority shareholder of Southwestern.
Okay.
And they just created a relationship. So my dad approached him one day and said, "Hey, I have a dilemma here." And this was back in the 80s when interest rates were outrageous.
Yeah, they were nuts. Like CDs were at 22%, inflation was higher, 18%, something like that, right? It was crazy time. So it was
back in those days. And he just said, "Hey, I don't have enough money to fulfill these orders. Would you want to invest in my company?"
Right.
They said, yes.
Right. And business owners know if you have purchase orders and they're good purchase orders, you can often finance them or get an investor or something. Right. Okay.
Right.
This is to invest in the business or to lend him money?
No, Southwestern was a partner. So they actually owned the company with him. And then when I was about 12 years old, he had a come to Jesus experience at an event called Promise Keepers.
Okay.
And he came home and told my mom, "Hey, I need to have a better relationship with my boys. I'm on the road all the time." And he sold the business and Southwestern bought it and was wholly owned by Southwestern.
Okay.
Moved us down to Dalton, Georgia. And then I ended up going to play college football for a few years. And after I got hurt, my dad set me down and said, "Hey, what are you going to do with the rest of your life?"
Right.
And at that point, football and athletics were really the only things I knew. I said, "I have no idea." And he goes, "I think you ought to go work with Southwestern." So that's how I got connected. Was he called the CEO at the time, Ralph Mosley, and said, "My son needs to sell books." He sent, he called a guy, Roger Smith, who is my sales manager, who sent another guy named Keith Kimball down to Dalton, Georgia, and signed me up. And that was in 2000. And that was probably the year of 2000 when that happened. And my first summer was 2001. And I've been there ever since.
And the main core of their business in those days was like educational books that you would go sell door to door, like kind of like encyclopedia type of books or?
Yeah. At the time they were reference guides. So they looked like encyclopedias, but they had math, science, history, social studies, foreign languages in a set of books. And they were designed to help save time on homework. And since then, my predecessor, Henry Bedford, created a vision that we needed to be online.
Yeah, of course.
So over 10 years ago, we started investing heavily into an online subscription model, where that's what we sell now.
Right.
And there's every level. There's different, I guess, websites where it's a learning management system. And really, it doesn't matter if you're learning to read and you're in kindergarten, or if you're learning algebra and you're an older kid. We have self-learning courses where you can just get online and there's a teacher that walks you through anything you need to know.
Right.
And then recently, we really have doubled down on the Global Academy. And our focus is entrepreneurship, leadership, and life skills and academics.
Great.
So for the past 10 years, we've really been building the foundation of academics and now adding what Southwestern is the best at, which is teaching people how to be better at being an entrepreneur, being leaders, and different life skills. And that's what is Southwestern Global Academy.
Okay. So, but a lot of these companies and this development and these different lines of business, they happened while you're with the company since you've been, I don't know if you were the CEO at the time, but since you joined them, right?
Let's see. When I joined 18 years ago, no, there was probably a dozen
lines of businesses.
Okay. And so now we're comprised of over 25. So I guess we've over doubled the number of businesses since I've been there.
Right. But in the 25, those aren't all the companies that you're dealing with. One of those divisions is a private equity division, right? That backs and puts money into other companies, or that's like the company in Latvia. Is that one of the 25 or no, that's in a division?
No, that's one of the 25. So I'm the CEO of all 25 of them. 14 years ago, more than that. Yeah. 14 years ago, I helped co-found Southwestern Consulting. So one of those 25 businesses I was the co-founder of.
Okay.
And we started off as a seminar business, and then we branched off and innovated that business and pivoted to coaching. And so now we do one-on-one coaching over the phone.
Right.
And we have a team of fully dedicated coaches all over the world. And we've had over 15,000 one-on-one coaching clients. And that's what we focus on now. So,
and is business coaching? You're coaching small business owners, or
we have three different programs. Okay. One's called Top Producer's Edge, and that's for salespeople. Another is the Manager's Edge, and that's leadership coaching. Okay. And then we have Executive Edge, so that's C-level strategy and coaching for the top leaders.
Sure.
And that business has become one of the top businesses in the entire family of companies at a very rapid rate. And I guess the first 10 years since we started coaching 10 years ago, we've produced over $100 million in revenue. And that's probably what helped get the role that I'm in now and applying some of those principles to the rest of our family of companies.
Okay. So let's go back a little bit. So from your book, I think you're working on another book, aren't you?
Yeah. So Redefining Possible is co-authored with a senior partner at Southwestern Consulting.
And that's not available for sale yet, right?
Yeah. You can go to
redefiningpossible.com
and pre-order the book.
Okay. So in the book, and you have a co-author, Ron Alford, right?
Correct.
So in the opening, Ron, and I admitted to you that I haven't finished the book, but I've been reading different parts of it and going through it. So you, in college, when you're selling for them, you broke some sales records, right? So you started out as a salesperson. Take me through, like, how does a kid in college who basically, I don't know if you had an interest in business or what, but you were doing sports, right? And you're like, I don't know what's going to do with my life now. And dad said, oh, go here. I have connections. And right? It's all about networking, connections, who you know, what you have access to. You might have never heard of the company if your dad wasn't involved. So you break that sales record in college, which is difficult when you have no sales training, right? What, take me through the progression of you joining the company. Now you're the CEO of the company, right? So that didn't happen the second year you're with the company. So take me through your history and what you've done with the company and how does it happen that you move up and you become the CEO of a very large entrepreneurial enterprise?
Yeah. Well, I think I asked myself that same question. I guess to start with is just absolute thankfulness and gratitude, and to know that this is a honor and a lot of responsibility. And sure. I'm very thankful for those that have come before me, where we have a long legacy, a long history. So to be able to carry that torch is something that is a lifetime honor. And I'm very thankful for the board of directors entrusting me to help steward our resources and our people in the right direction. And I would say that from the very beginning, you know, going into Southwestern, I really was a kid that was hell on wheels. And my life was sex, drugs, rock and roll, and you name it, I was doing it.
Right.
And I was aware enough to realize that this was a path of death and destruction.
Right, not sustainable. Sure.
Not sustainable. Friends were getting arrested. I mean, it was crazy.
Really?
And so I looked at Southwestern. I remember going to Southwestern, my very first sales school. And
Dustin, you were still in college at this point?
I was going into my sophomore year of college.
And what university were you at?
So I just finished playing football at Southwestern Baptist University in Bolivar, Missouri.
That's funny. Where all the drugs and rock and roll is?
Exactly. Yeah. No, my hometown, Dalton, Georgia, was really where that was going on.
Okay.
And so then I transferred to University of Tennessee. So once I transferred to University of Tennessee, that's when I started selling books. And that's where I was at this time.
That's the volunteers, right?
Yeah, the volunteers.
Peyton Manning went to, okay, got
it. That's right, Peyton Manning and that whole crew.
I'm a big college football person, even though we
don't. And they had just won the national championship. So they were the number one, actually, they were the number one party school on Sports Illustrated the year before I went there, to give you an idea of the kind of mind frame I was in.
This is perfect for you.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so, you know, going into Southwestern, that was the first time I had been surrounded by motivated people that were just good, principle-centered humans, and a lot of them. Everybody I met was just authentic and real and caring and wanted me to succeed, and I hadn't been in that environment in my entire life. And so I quickly realized this is different. And I met people like Dan Moore, who's the president of Southwestern Advantage, saw him on stage and telling his story of going to Harvard, and while he was graduating in 3 years from Harvard and selling books, he had some of the similar struggles that I had, but now he's gone on to become successful. And I thought, man, people like that, I want to surround myself with people like that. So even before my first summer, I'd already started thinking that way. And then my first summer, I ended up doing pretty well. I finished number one out of all the first year. That was out of about 3,000 salespeople.
And was that just from hustling? I mean, you're out there talking to people every day, right? Because you're young, you're new at this.
Yeah. I asked my sales manager, you know, he said, "What's your goal?" And I said, "To be number one." And he goes, "Well, you don't even know how to get through your approach. So you might want to start with learning your approach." But he said, if you want to be number one, everybody else is recommended to work 80 hours a week and they're doing 30 demos a day. So the way you can be number one is just outwork everybody. So he said, if you do 85 hours a week and you do 35 demos a day, then you might have a shot. So I wrote that down and took it literal. So I actually went out and I did work 85 hours a week. I did 35 demos a day. And
I mean, 35 demos a day, that's how long did a demo take? A demo's the books, right? You're showing them what you guys sell. I think somebody came to our house one day with books like that. But
yeah, so the top producers know how to get a 5 minute no and a 20 minute yes.
Got it. That's a good comment, because you want to weed check the people real quick if they're not going to be buyers, and you're going to spend you know, the better portion of a half an hour with them. Now you've lost that half an hour, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And I quickly did the math, and you know, that year, in about 10 weeks, I brought home a check of $26,000 as a sophomore.
Which is a huge amount of money for you, right?
Oh, I mean, that was life changing.
Right.
I mean, I'd never
even seen any of that much money in your life at one point. Right?
No.
Yeah.
And, and my dad helped me, and we have a financial planning company that advised me to invest in a 401k and then also real estate. So, started buying houses after every summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I bought 3 houses in 4 years while selling books. So
if I was exposed to that and knew that and did it at that age too, I mean, it's life changing. You can't make up for lost time. I wanted to make a comment though. I think that, you know, if you look at the outlier principle, right, there's always a situation, and you just pointed it out, where along your path, what you're doing, there's some sort of intervention by someone where you meet someone or you have an experience that opens your eyes to a different path and a different world. And so, you know, there are people that never have that opportunity or don't, you know, you were out there looking for it. I say that people make their own luck, but I think that what you were doing, and you were obviously very driven, but because of your exposure to these people, you saw what was possible. Like, a lot of people have that problem. They don't think that they can change what they're doing. They can. And I think that's I continue to see that from the people that I interview and talk to. It's something happened along the way where you were off the track. And luckily this happened very early on in your age. It wasn't like you were a drug addict when you're 40 and trying to get your life back together. That's hard to make lost time. But you know, you couldn't play football anymore, and you got exposed to something that opened your eyes to possibilities that you didn't even think were possible. I mean, you get a check for money that you thought you'd never hold in your hand, because when you're young, you can't really contemplate that. And then you start in business and real estate and things like that. So I think that it's a testament to the people. And if you study any of these people, I don't care if it's Bill Gates or the Beatles, something happened along the way where they had an opportunity to, you know, continue to program and learn computers or perform in pubs and get noticed, whatever it is. And I think that it's an interesting testament to the fact that it's important that we nurture people that we meet for opportunities. And that's kind of what your company does now, right? I mean, you said it before, it invests in people and supports the people to do the business. And I think that's what is important. And I think it needs to be said that your company, I'm not saying you're the only company that does this, kind of acts like you make business decisions as if people matter. And a lot of companies do not. And maybe that's one of the reasons why you're very successful. So I just wanted to point that out. I think it's very important that this happened to you. And now you guys continue to do that, really, is to pick people up who are good candidates type of people, you know?
Yeah. And not only pick them up, but as you said, keep them.
Yeah.
So people, it's funny when you get into investors and people that hear that we're in the business of starting new companies or whatever, they say, well, what's your strategy? What's your strategic plan?
Right.
And we kind of laugh and we go, well, it depends on the people and their passion. And our strategy is whatever our people are passionate about, we build businesses around that if it makes sense and it is in alignment to our core values and core competencies.
Right.
But at one point, there was a guy named Jeff Dobines who was passionate about financial planning, and we started a business around him. I'm a good example of that. I was passionate about coaching, so they built a business around me and a team of partners. You could go down the list of every one of our businesses, and the reason we got into that business was the person leading the business was passionate about it.
Right.
We were investing into the person more so than the type of business that it was.
And at the end of the day, that's really what you should be doing. I mean, because it comes down to the people, and the good private equity investors are always investing in the people because mm-hmm. you may have to pivot. It may not work, whatever. You got to rely on the rest of it's an idea, right? So you got to execute and be the right kind of person. But I think it's interesting because your quote unquote private equity model is not the typical model. Private equity is looking to, you know, drive EBITDA and grow businesses and then sell those businesses and have an exit strategy. You're really looking to nurture and build value and help people's lives and help the company at the same time.
That's right.
Yeah. Can we talk more about your development into a coach? Because I'm sure as a coach, you've been a mentor to a lot of people, helped people develop different opportunities. I'd like to hear about any stories that you have around that.
Sure. So my third year with the business, I ended up breaking the all-time company sales record, and I made a take home of over $100,000 as a junior in college.
Which is unheard of, right? I mean, none of us. Yeah.
Crazy. That was fun going to University of Tennessee with that paycheck.
Yeah.
So easy to make friends.
Right.
And so after that, everybody around the world started asking. That's when I did my first keynote. So a group out of our group in Scotland
right.
flew me to Scotland to train them on what did I do to break the company record.
Right. How did you do this? You're in college, right? You're a junior.
Yeah. And that's when I got the bug for public speaking and I took it serious. I put a PowerPoint together, and started working on that. And that was probably, how old was I? 20. I was probably 20 years old when I did that.
And harder to do, by the way, in those days. PowerPoint was not as easy to use as it is now.
Yeah, that's true. It was probably, the analog version of that.
Right.
It was just exactly. A flip chart or something.
Right, maybe.
And so then I met a guy named Theo. And he was the number three producer that year and company wide. So he had sold about 9,000 units, and he asked me to coach him. And at the time, I was number one. I'd broken the company record.
How many units did you sell?
20,000 units.
So look at the difference between three and one.
Right.
Big jump. Okay.
Yeah. Now the number two, the guy also broke the company record, Dave Brown, who's now one of my business partners, and best friends, he sold 19,000 units.
Oh,
so it was this race. There's a whole story.
Right.
Just there. But then, yeah, Theo was with 9,000 units. And he said, man, if you could coach me, that would be great. And so I said, okay. So I actually created a curriculum. I wrote down modules of things that I wanted to talk to him about. And that was my very first coaching client. And he ended up going from 9,000 units to 19,000 units. And he was within, he had one single day that summer that if he would have worked one more day, he would have broke the record. And I think out of just honor, kind of like Karate Kid, not wanting to take down Master Miyagi or something,
he didn't.
The only reason he didn't break the record. And so I wish he would have, but he didn't. And so that was my first coaching client. And I got more satisfaction out of helping Theo over double his production.
Sure.
And I did my own personal ability to break the record. And so that's when I knew coaching was for me, and that's what I wanted to dedicate my life to doing, is helping other people reach their goals in life. And then that's when we started, that's when the idea was planted to start a coaching business.
So it was really just you coaching him, and then you approached the company and said, hey, I want to start this coaching business.
Well, Dan Moore, the president of Southwestern Advantage, found out I wanted to write a book. And so that last year, I was selling books in Alaska. In Alaska, yeah.
Okay.
And
that is a separate story, like how that happened?
Oh, there's all kinds of separate. So the person who was the former company record holder was this beautiful girl named Kaya.
Okay.
And ended up getting married to her, and she is now my wife.
Oh, very nice. I like
now,
that story.
Kaya and I, our last summer, sold in Alaska. So it was the two of us. We were engaged at the time, and we were selling in Alaska.
Was she from Alaska?
No.
What were you just doing in Alaska?
After breaking the company record, I asked the president at the time, could I go sell in Alaska? And he said, sure. And they gave us Alaska as our territory.
So you're like, I'm in Tennessee. Let's go to Alaska.
I just thought it would be really cool to go to Alaska. And
okay.
And so while I was there, I started writing a book, talked to Dan Moore about ideas and advice about writing a book. He said, why are you writing a book? And I said, well, I think I'm going to get into coaching and training. And he said, you know, that's a business that as a company, we've been talking about getting into for many years. How would you like to start the business with Southwestern?
Got it.
That was the first time I even thought of that as a possibility. I met a guy named Henry Bedford, who had just become the CEO of the company. And then he started interviewing me, asked me to put a business plan together. We spent a year working on the business plan, and then we launched it in 2006. He introduced me to another guy named Gary Michaels, who was with our fundraising business. And then we started the company together.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSight Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSight. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSight and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable, and most of all, help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show. So you really were just going to start your own coaching company. You weren't thinking like, I'm going to do this with Southwestern.
Not until that conversation with Dan. And then after that, meeting Henry, and then multiple conversations with Henry back in 2005 and working on the business plan. And
right.
Yeah. Meeting Gary Michaels and saying, all right, here's a business partner for you. And I had been recruiting a few other people along the way that I brought to the table. And we all went out to San Jose, California. And we started as a seminar business, actually selling tickets to do a big seminar. So
group, coaching or speaking in front of groups about the sales and stuff. You know, I know you brushed over it a little bit, but you mentioned about writing a business plan, which obviously Southwestern is not going to get involved in any group that doesn't have a business plan. But I think it's pretty important that, and this is one of the torches I carry, is that there are entrepreneurs all the time that start a business and they don't really have a well thought out business plan. They might have some things in writing. Sometimes they have very little in writing and they don't do the work up front to, let's not say ensure, but increase the chances of being successful, you know, early on. And I'm sure that's a requirement. You're not going to work with somebody who doesn't have a business plan. So
yes. Yeah. The plan, your success will only be as strong as your plan. And so if you don't have a plan, you don't know where you're going. Right. So you have to map it out. You have to put milestones. You have to break it down. We're big fans of 5-year business plans.
Yeah. So I think more than 5 years is too much. You know, things change too much.
That's right. Yeah. So even our existing businesses, we forecast 5 years for all of our businesses, but especially when we're doing M&A work and we're evaluating a new business, any success tracks they have and financials that they have and modeling to look at to make sure the model's right in addition to the person being right.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that it's a good lesson because you can't, it's like you and I saying, okay, here we're going. We're going this direction. And you say, okay, but first put on your blindfold. We're all going to get blindfolded and I'm going to drive the car. I mean, that's basically what running, if you have a small business and you're a local person, and even if it's an internet business, if you don't have a track to run on, first of all, we never remember anything. Like we're notoriously terrible because just the way the brain works as remember things. I'm a big proponent, obviously, putting things in writing. That's what I do 80% of my time is writing agreements, negotiating deals for business owners. But constantly I get involved in situations where they don't really have anything in writing. And it's not that you and I are trying to rip each other off or disagree. You remember it one way and I remember it another way. And we both are sure that that's what we talked about and what we agreed upon and the way it happened. And it's never like that. So if you don't put things in writing and you don't have a plan, you won't have something to go back and look on and say, well, where were we off? What mistake did we make? What was wrong with our projection? You know, what other business ideas did we have? I don't know. So I think that that's a, I'm running a five, well, by the time this comes out, I'll probably be over, but I'm running a business plan challenge right now for business owners for free. They can sign up and, you know, 5 days I'll write their plan, basic plan, but at least it gets them started. So we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah. You know, as I look back, so I've been CEO of the family of companies for 2 years.
Okay.
We started over 10 new businesses in that time period. And some of those were already in the works.
In just the 2 years?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It is.
That almost doubled the size of your company.
Well, we went from 19 to 30.
Okay.
And now the other side of that is there was a lot of learning lessons, a lot of things that if I could go back and do again, we might have approached it a little different.
Right.
A good number of those also were already in the works. So it's not like these were just businesses that I was personally navigating and shepherding. Right. There was a lot of stuff that was already cooking that just happened to land. But if I were to go back and say, for the ones that didn't work, and we've had to right size or course correct or shut down a good number of businesses as well, you could tie it back to what you're talking about with the plan. The plan wasn't as well thought out as it should have been. The pricing model didn't really have the right factors in it. We call them CSFs, critical success factors, where, and you use the same term we use with the track to run on, where the leader didn't have the numbers dialed in terms of how many calls are you going to make per day? How many appointments are you going to set? Right. What's your closing ratio going to be? And what's your price point to drive to back up the budget? And the success ones, like I was mentioning in Estonia, those we started a smoke alarm business. And so we have tens of thousands of clients out in Estonia that we're helping save lives by providing smoke alarm services. And we go door to door, and we also offer it in supermarkets.
But Estonia is Eastern Bloc
countries,
right?
Yeah, it's the Baltic states.
Okay.
And the plan was really dialed in, the recruiting and the selling side of it. And then if you were to dissect another business that started around the same time as the E1 Ventures and said, well, why did they not succeed? I would say one of those factors is the plan wasn't as good. We didn't have critical success factors dialed in, and there might be a variety of other things, but that definitely is one of the learning lessons, is that moving forward, we will not do business with starting something or engaging in something without that being tightened.
Yeah, because then you don't have performance indicators.
Mm-hmm.
As you're analyzing the business as it's going forward, you have no way to measure, or at least not specifically enough, what the problem is. I mean, I guess in Estonia, there a lot of people don't have smoke detectors, so it's obviously a marketplace.
It's unlike America, where I think it's required in America. It hasn't been a regulated thing in how they build their houses. And unfortunately, there's problems. They all have fireplaces, and you could imagine, just like anywhere.
Sure.
And if you don't have a smoke detector, that's critical. There was a story in the newspaper where a family of five actually died from a regular house fire. And that was before we started the business. Since then, they have numerous testimonials of a very similar situation. But the smoke alarm went off. They were able to get out of the house.
Yeah, right, sure.
And we know that there's a handful of examples that they can tie back to the fact we knocked on their door and sold them a smoke alarm.
Right.
And so it's a gratifying business to know, you're helping a country that needs that. So
right. So how did that, because it almost doesn't, it's a weird offshoot of what you're doing. How did that come about, that opportunity?
Again, the people. So Yak Rosari is one of our key leaders. He's been with the company for 20 years.
Okay.
And he saw the opportunity of the need. It was really the need.
Is he from that area?
Yeah, he's in Estonia. We have thousands of people in Estonia. It's kind of this of salespeople.
Got it.
Yeah. Through Southwestern Advantage. So these are people that during the summer, they come over for summer work, and it's a cultural exchange program where they are able to learn about America. They're in school, and during their summer, they're able to develop skills that they then bring back to their home country. About 5 years ago, I actually met the president of Estonia randomly. He was walking on the street and started talking with them, and he found out I was with Southwestern, and he said, thank you. He said, Estonia needed selling skills and entrepreneur skills, and your company has brought those to our country. I've heard of you guys, and I'm so thankful that you're here.
That was the president of the country.
The president of the country said that.
Wow. Yeah. So basically, this gentleman was involved with the company and then brought the idea to you guys and said, hey, I want to start this business. Will you do it with me? It wasn't
yes.
that easy.
I mean, it wasn't exactly in that
right.
sequential of an order, but that's the gist of it. Was Yak was somebody that we already, I've been to Estonia almost 10, around 10 times now over the past 8 years. So I go almost every year, if not twice a year. And so he just had been floating ideas of different businesses. We need to start there. And finally, the idea of creating an incubator in Estonia was what made the most sense. So now there's three businesses that he oversees. So we have a charity business. Uh-huh. That's another thing. So it's kind of a blue ocean opportunity where they don't even, it's like United Way. And that is a foreign concept over there. Charity and giving is not as normal as it is in the United States.
Okay.
So we're educating the market on the benefits of giving and charity.
Okay.
So we have a portfolio of companies that people can donate to that it functions like United Way, but we started it. So it's helping Estonia, and it's the business that's one of the other businesses in addition to New Blue, which is the smoke alarm business.
I got it. So the idea was an incubator, really,
yeah,
to develop and nurture businesses, and that's what came out of that.
That's right.
Yeah, I think that's a great model. So
the goal is to start a business or two every single year is what they're going to be doing.
Okay, so in terms of your path, you were in sales. You obviously did very well from that. And what did you go from there to running other companies? Yeah, you're only the CEO for 2 years, so there was a period of time where you were doing other things, right, within the company.
Right. So then that story of starting the seminar
coaching business,
then the right. coaching business. So I'm the president of Southwestern Coaching. And that's really most of my time has been. Yes, I have a dual title.
Okay,
so
got it.
I'm CEO and president and
got it.
Of the coaching business. And the coaching business is doing great. You know, we have 120 coaches. That's the reason I started going to Estonia is we have 10 coaches that are there in the Baltic region. I think we have 7 just in Estonia alone. We have coaches in Latvia, Lithuania. So that was a big reason why I was going there before becoming CEO was building our coaching business and working with our team there. Andrus Albi is our leader there and he does a great job and our team is amazing. And so that's what took most of my time and helping create the curriculum and helping lead the company and personally producing, you know, I was wearing many hats.
Now, do you co-own the coaching business with Southwestern or are you an employee of the company and they own the business?
So we have an interesting model. So in 1982, we created a private equity plan that all the family member companies put the profits into and it's owned by the employees. So there's not one owner. There's not like a majority shareholder. There used to be with Spencer Hayes. When he passed the ownership amongst the people that were already owners.
Okay.
And so it's a very unique model. So the answer is I do own it, but I own the proportion that I've contributed to based on merit. So we have a merit-based system. Every year I can earn more shares based on what I've contributed. And all of our family member companies works the same way.
Wow.
So it's based on your revenue and your margin that
right.
you contribute. There's shares that are vested over a period of time. And there's a schedule and there's a whole, I'll spare you the details, but it's a fun thing. We've distributed over $300 million to shareholders over the past, since 1982. And so there's many, many multimillionaires out there that
right.
have built their business at Southwestern and retired. And so it's a built-in ecosystem where you can start a business and you have a built-in buyer day one of the business that you start.
Right.
And so that's what attracts entrepreneurial-minded people.
Sure.
Like myself. Like that's what helped me to know, hey, instead of starting this coaching business on my own, why would I want to do that? And equity was part of it in addition to the systems and the people. But
right.
knowing I had an exit plan and also coaching is an interesting intellectual property based business that's hard to sell.
Right.
We knew Zig Ziglar back in his twilight and he shared with us that was one of his frustrations in his last days was what to do with his business.
Do you guys own the Zig Ziglar company?
No.
Somebody does though, right? Wasn't it sold?
I didn't follow it. At one point it was his son and
right. I remember that. And maybe they sold to Nightingale Conant or one of the other.
It was, I don't recall the details.
He's got great stuff, but I think your model is fantastic. You everyone is not only incentivized to do better, but they're all incentivized to make everyone else successful. I mean, it benefits everyone. So you don't just own shares in your coaching business. Do you own shares in the whole company?
Bingo.
Yeah.
And it motivates across the board. So
right.
people in the real estate business are just as motivated to make the coaching business successful. The coaching business is motivated to make the door-to-door education sales business successful. So it's this ecosystem of everybody wanting to help each other because they own the company.
Yeah, and there's no silos where businesses are completely separated from each other.
Right. There's no different shares of stock. It's all one stock. Okay. So it's a very transparent, motivational, entrepreneurial plan.
But Southwestern is a privately owned company. There's no public stock.
That's right. It's all privately owned. So okay, we were publicly owned. We learned our lesson. We were owned by Times Mirror back in the 70s.
Okay.
So they bought us, and then we did a leveraged buyback in 1982. And Spencer Hayes put up most of the capital. There was one other guy that put in $5,000, and Spencer paid for the rest.
Okay.
And that's when we bought the company back from Times Mirror. And just the pressure of being a publicly traded company is much different than a private company.
Right.
And that's when they made the strategic decision that we're going to be private. We're going to play the long game with our equity plan and the businesses we acquire. And that's when that strategy began. And that's why, again, I'm just so thankful that I feel God has allowed me to take on this role, because I by no means, I'm just inheriting something that's pretty cool, that's just such an honor to be a steward of. But there's many people that have come before me that put these things in place.
Yeah, well, I think when you're a public company, that's when the competing interests of the company get put before the interests of the people behind the company, because you have a conflict of interest between satisfying shareholders very often and doing things that you think are right for the business in the long run. And you're playing the stock game to keep your value up and all that kind of stuff.
That's right.
And I don't think your model would work the way it works if you had to deal with the public markets as well.
In the last 2 years, we've had to make a lot of decisions that were long-term decisions.
Right.
We had to right-size some things. One of our businesses, it was just an industry factor where one of our products just completely evaporated on the market. Similar to Blockbuster Video.
Right.
Where
just obsolete.
Yeah, it just didn't matter what Blockbuster Video did.
Right.
It was going away. Right. You
know? Well, it did matter early on if they did what Netflix did and didn't blow the whole thing. But yeah,
well,
the stores were gone. Nobody's renting videotapes anymore. Forget it, CDs.
Bingo. So we had a product that the world stopped buying, and we just couldn't keep, you know, trying to
force
that.
There was no pivot at all.
We had to pivot. So in order to pivot, there were a lot of changes that happened, where if you were a publicly traded company, people, you'd have had so much pressure that it had been very
difficult. Analysts would have just slaughtered you.
That's right.
Yeah.
But we did it. We did it right. And thank God we did it all before COVID. So now that the fundamentals are in place and the model is flexible, we're having one of our best financial years ever in the middle of COVID, because the changes were made to the model the year before. And so those are the type of things, as a private company, you can make long-term decisions that a public company, I don't even know how that would have played out.
So. I've seen companies get crushed because of the media and analysts, and they're trying to make long-term moves, and there's bad articles coming out and people are jumping ship, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So and then I want to get into the book a little bit. How has this whole pandemic, the COVID situation, affected your company or the companies? Have some been negatively affected, some been positively affected? How has it affected your whole business world?
Sure. You know, we're just like anybody in terms of it's been affected. And this is a very real situation, you know, a global pandemic. Our number one focus, has been the health and safety of our team.
Yeah.
And we immediately went with the government recommendations and started working virtual. And but we have had team members, unfortunately, from a variety of different places all over the world that have been impacted and actually had COVID-19. So we have thousands of people all over. So it was inevitable. But I would say the percentage of people that have gotten it, we've been scoring pretty good on not having a lot of people get it. So so that was our number one focus. Also just certain businesses from a just pure financial standpoint. I mean, we have a travel business we have a visa business that brings people from America to other countries and countries to America to work.
Yeah.
I mean, and so it doesn't matter what you do with a few of those businesses. There was very big obstacles in the way. However, I am just so thankful that Southwestern's roots is really, there was a book that was written about Southwestern called Finding a Way. And they researched all the different family of companies and people that have gone through Southwestern over the past 160 years and said, what's the common thread of these people? What makes them unique?
Right.
And the word is persistence. And finding a way over, under, around, or right through any obstacle in the way. I mean, think of our company history. We went through the Great Depression, you know, the Spanish flu and everything in between.
Survive those, you'll survive this one.
Yeah, both world wars, you know. So grit is part of our DNA. And it's interesting. I think our team actually responded to it with more vigor than if it wouldn't have happened. So it was just a team of people that when the going gets tough, they get going even more.
Sure.
And they're already go-getters. And so really proud of Southwestern Advantage. You could imagine so first off, a company that recruits college kids and then all the colleges shut down during our prime recruiting season.
Yeah.
And we pivoted to a virtual recruiting model. And the month of April was one of our best months ever in the United States at recruiting.
Really?
For that business. And then we pivoted our product line, as I was saying, Southwestern Global Academy being the main focus of selling in-home resources that are online that help you when you're a parent and you need help with your kid's school.
And that's so what everybody's doing now, right? Now you're a teacher at home.
We have the product that people need. And so that was obviously to our favor. But then you had to get it out there. So we had to pivot. We created, for the first time ever, this is a 160-year-old door-to-door selling model. And we created Mark Rao and the entire team of leaders at Southwestern Advantage created a virtual selling model. We had months where every week we were testing it, coming back, calibrating. There was about 26 people on this test, and they did it. And we launched a virtual selling model with people, hundreds of people all over the world selling virtually. We did a month of that. Then June rolls around and Nashville goes to phase three. We open up and we're allowed to do a social distance training.
Right.
So we did. And we caught that window where that was totally acceptable. And we got everybody ready to go. We strategically looked at a map of where the lowest COVID locations are.
Right.
And so now our people are probably in some of the safest places in the country. Of
that
where
are not
they're,
spiking and things
they're
like that.
They're not spiking. They're in all the rural areas that aren't, you know, the people walking around giving it
right,
to
it's not next
and,
to each
and
other.
And they're wearing masks, they're socially distanced. We're following all the rules the right way. And what we're finding is we're having our best year ever since 2005 right now.
Wow.
And I'm, it's just incredible. I get goosebumps as I'm even talking about it. Cause if you think of all the pieces and parts of what you had to do and what the team had to do to pull that off, and that's our, you know, that's our number one company. And if that wouldn't have happened, you know, I probably would have a different tone right now of just being like, well, you know, things are tough, and things are tough, but that company, our investment business, is having a banner year. They've actually, all their clients have been investing more during the crazy market. The coaching business is growing. So people are actually in the middle of all this. More people are signing up for coaching. And so some of these companies that already were leading are leading by even more and carrying a lot of the weight for some of the companies that are inevitably going to get impacted, like the travel business.
Sure. But it sounds like you have a lot of resilient people who are not only hard workers, but you know, really stepping up to in a crazy time. I mean,
that's right.
It's nuts.
I mean, it's again, just the DNA of Southwestern. And this is just so awesome to be part of a team and the group of leaders and the team members that just are are Southwestern. They're some of the most amazing, hardworking, determined. They don't live in fear. You know, I've talked to some of our clients who are taking a wait and see approach towards this whole pandemic. And they have been sitting at home for 3 months with their fingers crossed, hoping that they're going to find some cure. And we've taken the approach, what if this gets worse? What if, you know, and so we have not waited around to see what was going to happen. And we pivoted all of our businesses, including the travel business. The travel business is one of the best examples where they are actually still profitable as of today, year to date. And they're doing virtual events. They're helping people. I mean, they're changing their entire model
to
survive right now.
Right. Well, it probably makes you proud to be the captain of the ship right now, you know, with all the people and what they're doing. And
yeah, I would say thankful. I just feel like it's just like, God, I don't know if I have another word besides
blessed, just, maybe.
Yeah, tons of gratitude. Yeah,
right. Sure.
Just like, it's like inheriting something that you don't deserve, but you're extremely grateful for.
All right. I know I've had you on the mic for a long time, and I'm sure you probably got to run to another meeting, but can we talk a little bit about the book?
Sure.
That Beth had said was delayed, but I guess it is available now.
Well, pre-sales. So,
okay.
Yeah, I just wanted everybody to know if you want the book, you can go to redefiningpossible.com.
Okay. We'll put a link in the show notes. Pre-order
the book.
Okay.
I don't know. For
this may be available by the time the episode comes out. It may very well be available. So,
yeah, there is some edits being made where the launch date right now might be within a month or two.
Yeah, and just so for people listening, we're taping this on July 30th. So if it's coming out in the fall, the book may very well be available.
There you go. Yeah. If regardless of when they're listening to it, redefiningpossible.com will have the, either you buy it right then and you get it today, or it might be soon. So
okay. So tell me about the book and how Ron fits in with you and a little bit of tidbits from the book before I let you get off to your day, because it's not like you're one of a small company. So
Ron is one of the most incredible people you'll ever meet in your life. He'd be a good one actually to have on your show.
Okay.
He is a senior partner. He's been with Southwestern for 25 years. He broke many records in personal selling, team building. He had more 10,000 unit producers as a leader than I think anybody in our company history. At Southwestern Consulting, he was our first trifecta winner, meaning personal production, personal recruiting, and personal team growth is the trifecta. And he won that. And he was competing against some of the best salespeople in the world to win that. He's an ultra athlete, so he's ran 100 miles around Mount Rainier. He's ran the Grand Canyon rim to rim to rim. On his 40th birthday, he ran 40 miles. I mean, he's...
So what you're saying is he's a bad salesman and he's in terrible shape.
That's right.
Right.
And you know, you meet people like Ron and you think God's just shining down on them and they're really lucky. And the reality is, usually people like that have had more trouble, more challenges than even the average, Joe or whatever.
Right.
And Ron definitely has had to redefine possible many times in his life, and myself too. You know, we're both self-proclaimed ragamuffins that have messed up more than we can count. And are just thankful for grace and being able to recover and to redefine possible multiple times in our life.
Right.
So the book is really about how to do that and how do you meet adversity head on and redefine what's possible in your life. So the subtitle is Breaking Belief Barriers and Creating a New Normal.
Well, that's a paradigm shift, right? I mean, looking at things differently than you... are looking at them now. Look, I think that, you know, if we don't mess up and if we don't have hardship in our life, we don't build resiliency and we don't learn. The problem is that you can't guarantee that everyone who goes through things like that makes it out on the other side, you know, because some people are not resilient. Some people fall apart and they tumble more when they go through difficult things. But, you know, that's why you want to get the message out that, you know, learning is a process and you can, you know, do better and improve yourself and you know, grow and all the things that, that you guys have done. I think Redefining Possible is a very good title. I don't know how long it took you to come up with that, but it's kind of apropos.
Yeah. Years. It was, I'd say this has been a topic of that we've been talking about in keynotes 7-8 years. Actually, physically writing the book was 3 years, and we're very excited for the final book to be done and to get it out into the world now.
Okay. Well, I won't give too much of it away. I know that there's basic 7 basic strategies in the book, and people can read it and follow it, and we'll put it in the show notes and get it out there. But Dustin, I can't thank you enough for connecting with me and, you know, being up from the Northeast. I never really heard of your company and what you guys do and all the, you know, tremendous entrepreneurial stuff that a large corporation is doing for really for small business people and for people that are entrepreneurial minded. So well, what's a good way for them to interact with you if people want to connect with you?
Sure. I mean, I have a personal, you could either go to DustinHillis.com.
Okay.
Which will redirect you to Southwestern.com. Southwestern.com is a good way to learn more about the family of companies.
Are you on any of the social media platforms?
Yeah, just, I'm on all, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Okay.
I think you can just type in Dustin Hillis. There is a mayor in Atlanta or a councilman in Atlanta with my same name. So it's,
that's not you.
No, the Twitter, I guess, is Dustin Hillis CEO.
Okay.
Yeah. It's unfortunate right. when somebody has the same name as you and they actually are doing really good things because the right. media, you have to know which one you're looking at.
Right. So. All right. Well, I thank you for coming on and we'll get this out and share all of your great thoughts and your great ideas. I appreciate your time this morning.
Excellent. Thanks, Mitch.
Thanks so much, Dustin.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.